Brad joining us in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair. And I still have the pin she gave us. It's pinned above my desk. Justice for Joyce. Is Joyce Stockmull's sister, Mary Ann Heffernan. Joyce was murdered at the hands of David Weinberg, who was then released from jail last year. He had been sentenced to life in prison, and then he gets out of jail. But that said, the House Minority Leader, Themis Claridis, with the help of people such as Mary Ann, is pushing four bills that hopefully not only will get a hearing, but get voted on. Good time credits, felon furloughs, murder registry, and the habeas task force. And here to talk about this today is Mary Ann Heffernan. Mary Ann, good morning and welcome to Brad and Dan.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Mary Ann, I want to say something to you, too. When I found out that you were coming on the program, I will never forget that day that I met you. I'm so glad you're back, and I'm so glad that you haven't given up and will never give up. Thank you.
Now, Mary Ann, I know you're going to be speaking on this bill involving the habeas task force. The hearing is going to be tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock in room 2E at the Legislative Office Building. So let's start there. Begin with, because people might not even know about habeas corpus. So let's start there. Explain to our audience what it is.
Yeah, that's a great point, and thanks for bringing that up. And that's one of the things that we actually have learned in putting this information out there through the Justice for Joyce Facebook page is most people don't know what a habeas corpus claim is. And I'm not a lawyer, but I've tried to do my research. And in general, I can say that the writ of habeas corpus is a order for an inmate to be brought to court to have it be determined whether or not that person has been imprisoned lawfully or not, and whether he should be released from custody. So you might think that sounds outrageous, since in our case, David Weinberg was convicted at trial of his crime of murder. So, you know, where does the ability to come back and say we don't want that to be true anymore, and we want another crack at this? It's a little hard to explain to the layperson. I have a hard time wrapping my head around it as well, but that's what that is.
So what would this bill do? Because I know that you have suggested there are a lot of these suspects out there who play the system of habeas corpus. What would this do?
That's right. So what this does is, with a habeas case, they are allowed to file a claim for whatever reason they legally want to latch on to say, you know, I deserve either a new trial or I deserve to have my case thrown out and erased and be released from prison. There is really no evidence that we have found so far, and again, I'm not a lawyer, but to show that there is any limit to how many times a convict can bring a habeas case. In our case, there were two habeas cases filed, neither of which we knew about, which is one of our major complaints about the process, is the victim's family had absolutely no idea that the person who viciously destroyed their lives and killed their loved one was trying to get out of prison. When he went to prison, sentenced to life without the possibility of parole, David Weinberg was never supposed to get out. Lo and behold, many years later, we find out not only was he trying to get out on a habeas a year or so ago, but he had tried a habeas back in 1997, which we never heard about. So again, another problem with the system where the inmates know how to work this stuff. The criminals know that not everybody pays attention to this stuff, and the system is so clogged that there's not time to pay attention to these kinds of things. So, you know, they know how to work it. They know how to work it. And in our case, two bites at the apple was enough to get him out of prison. These guys can do multiple bites at the apple. And the example I like to give in the David Weinberg first habeas was the claim that he brought initially was that he had ineffective trial counsel. And if anybody recalls our case, David Weinberg had very well-known defense attorney, John Williams, out of New Haven. And We had to wait. Our family was required to wait over 3 years to go to trial because John Williams' case log was so busy and he was tied up with so many other important cases that he didn't have time to try the David Weinberg case. So the system said he was entitled to the attorney of his choice, and we were told we had to be patient and wait. We waited over 3 years to go to trial for him to have the counsel of his choice. So to claim ineffective trial counsel in a habeas case all these years later, absolutely incredible and ridiculous. And then he went on to claim ineffective appellate counsel because, of course, he appealed this case and lost it at the appellate level. But again, you know, just throwing a claim in there that has no basis, and yet our system says, okay, well, that sounds legit. Let's explore it. He's got a right to explore it. You know, lastly, in reviewing my notes for this discussion today, I saw that he also claimed innocence in his habeas trial, the most recent one, claiming innocent, that he was wrongfully convicted. Now, how you can go through a grueling murder trial, which took, I would say, let's see, started September of 88, finished in November, late November 88. So over 2 months, we sat in Waterbury Court. And to claim now, all these years later, that he was innocent, but never proclaimed it all these years going, it's incredible to me. You know, so that's our habeas system at its worst. And you know, on top of that, I guess the last point I would make is that the release from prison, the modification of sentence, none of that, absolutely none of that proved him innocent. He was not released as innocent. He was released as the murderer of record of Joyce Stockmall. He is still guilty, but he is a free man in Connecticut.
Mary Ann, you know what I can't understand? There's a national registry for sex offenders in some states. There's a similar registry for those who harm animals. Sadly, there actually are convicted murderers who get out of prison, as you have just illustrated. And
that's right.
You just feel that this is a no-brainer.
Well, and you know what? I know that there is a push. I know you're pushing for a murder registry, but Marianne, I just want to go back to what you were talking about previously. If people want another example of the habeas system, Joshua Komisarzewski, one of the Pettit killers, last year filed a motion with the state Supreme Court asking to be granted a new trial because of alleged judicial errors during the pretrial process and the trial. So this is the system that I'm hoping this bill would create, would correct, I hope.
Yeah, we would hope so. You know, there are so many ways to slice and dice our judicial system, and for very crafty, creative defense attorneys to find ways to, you know, latch onto a particular piece of information and turn it into a reason for release of these dangerous criminals. And it's got to stop. I mean, somebody has to let the public, you know, learn that this is the way the system works. It is not automatically set up to protect the innocent, as we have witnessed and experienced, unfortunately, in our lives and many other people as well. And it's time that the voice of the victim and the victim's families have some rights and have the protection and assurance that they will have a fair shake in the system. Nobody has a fair shake in the system when the convicted violent offenders and criminals are manipulating it to their benefit time and time again.
And you know, the lawyers, you say, they know how to play it right down to the wire. They absolutely do. So that's why it's got to be changed. What do you think the chances are? Does it look good?
Well, are you speaking about the habeas?
Yeah.
Well, I think I feel pretty comfortable that if we can make a clear case and help to sort of bring to light some of the reasons why we feel a task force could be an effective way to at least make a start, I think we do have a chance. But it's going to take some effort on our part to continue to, you know, put the message out there, to reach out to our legislators, to make sure that they know that there are many, many people that are in favor of at least taking a look at it, because, you know, think about it from a very practical perspective. Our state has been in turmoil with our budget, and last year's extended session with our legislators is quite good evidence of that. You know, they're always looking for ways to figure out how do we get out of this hole that we're in budget-wise in the state. Well, what about looking at things like the habeas system and the glut of waste that's happening with that, with these cases that are being brought that are bogging down our prosecutors' offices? What about the resources they're putting in to handle these habeas cases? I don't have numbers in front of me, but I would hope that a habeas task force would do the research and the homework to find out how many cases are being filed every year. I did an online search recently and found a website.
You know, Marianne, I'm just going to ask you to hold your thoughts for a moment, because we're coming up on a traffic report, and then we'll be back with Marianne Heffernan, Brad.
Marianne Heffernan, who lost a sister to a murderer, and he's out walking around.
Marianne, this website, what's this website you want to talk about?
Well, I was just actually mentioning some reference that research I had done to look into how many habeas cases there are out there that are still kind of clogging our system. And it indicated to me, and I could only go back so far, but I went back as far as 2013, over 1,000 habeas cases on the books that I could see as of last night. Now, again, it's up to the task force, if we get one, to find out,
wow,
you know, really what those numbers are. But my point is, you know, what is the criteria for filing a habeas? Is it clear and specific, or is there so much room for ambiguity that all these claims can continue to give these convicts multiple bites at the apple, which is what our understanding is now, is there is unlimited chances to continue to bring habeas until you get out of prison, until you get out of your sentence. What does it say about our criminal justice system if any case can be chipped away through habeas like this? You know, what are the billable hours that are being racked up by these attorneys? They're making lots of money, and nobody will say it on the record and out loud in public, but what we were told last year when we went through our hell was this is a known money grab, that people in the system know that there's a lot of money to be made on habeas cases, so let's not rock the boat. You know, but really, what's the criteria? How is it allowed that you have this many chances to keep coming back until you finally find a way to make a case crumble? No case is going to be perfectly solvable, because you don't always have, most of the time you don't have witnesses to a crime. You know, you have to work with the system that we have and make it better. It includes looking at the habeas situation and the habeas process and figuring out, you know, really how much is being wasted on resources to investigate these cases. They've got, you know, prosecutors have to spend time on these cases. They've got assistants that are supporting them. They've got administrative staff supporting them. They've got investigators who are looking into these claims. They've got preparation for those trials. There's judges that are being, you know, tied in and being bogged down in these cases one after another.
Marianne, we're coming up on a break. Can you hold through the break? Because we do want to ask you a couple of more questions. Terrific.
Sure.
Thank you. Brad, a couple of more questions for our guest, Marianne Heffernan, talking about, she's going to be testifying tomorrow about the habeas task force that's being proposed. And again, it's room 2E in the legislative office building at 11 in the morning. One of four bills being proposed by House Minority Leader Themis Claridis. And Marianne, before we wrap up our interview, I'd like to examine one of these other bills, and it has to do with the murder registry. So I'm going to ask you, why should we have a murder registry here in Connecticut?
I think it's very simple. It's public safety. The public has a right to know who their neighbors are and who their coworkers are, if these people are getting jobs and being supported in some way and being put back into society with the rest of us who actually abide by the laws and don't harm others. Every state has a sex offender registry. And now, as you noted before, there are states that are starting to have registries for those who abuse and hurt animals. How in the world do we not have a registry that requires convicted murderers to be on the hook for reporting in, for letting people know, you know, on the record where they live, and so that people can know what they've done and who they're living amongst? It does seem to me like a no-brainer. But we do know that There will be pushback, and we expect that people will feel that it's not fair to these convicted serious offenders. But nonetheless, you know, we feel it's important for public safety. People have a right to know who their neighbors are, who their coworkers are.
No question.
Thank you. Thank you so much,
Marietta. Julie. We're going to push this bill. I mean, you're right. You've got all these other lists, and we don't have a list, a registry for convicted murders. It'll be interesting to see what the pushback is. But, Marianne, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us about this, and good luck tomorrow.
Thank you very much. I hope folks will check out Justice for Joyce and help us to support our efforts by joining our outreach.
I'll tell you one thing. We're not going to forget you ever, so you'll be back. Don't you worry about that.
Thanks, Marianne.
Thanks so much.
You bet. Take care.